I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ah, hello there, dear listener. It's me, Joe. I notice you've tuned in once again to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. Just remember, we dish out double the content over on our Patreon, patreon.com/guitarnerds. Go on, you'll love it. You'll pay your monthly fee and I will literally roll around in your hard-earned cash, probably wearing something provocative. Jay's not going to like this advert at all.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
I've been kissed by a rose on the face.
Oh, we love Seal. And Matthew Knight.
A brief history of cheese.
Yes. we've been getting quite involved in Seal this evening. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, just amazed. I don't really know how it came up, but we're just talking about it. Amazed how many records Seal sold.
Unbelievable. How many records was
something
it?
Like, it was like 20 or 30 million albums, something
outrageous.
Like that.
What did you say that his net crazy. Worth was?
It was a lot. It was like 20 million pounds or dollars.
What a man.
One of those.
The only question is why he's called Seal.
Couldn't find it on his Wikipedia page.
It's just a weird animal
it's
to
not,
choose
it's,
as your
It's not
your
on
thing.
His Wikipedia.
No, it's not on there.
No. I don't know why you'd do that.
I'm going to Google it. Keep talking.
His real name's Henry Seal. But his first name's Henry. If I was going to pick an animal, I'd go for a tiger or a
walrus,
you know, a giraffe. Or yeah, if you want to pick like a sort of semi-aquatic mammal, I'd go for the walrus. That's really the fiercest of all the sort of sea cow type creatures.
Other names. But no, he went for Henry a seal. Samuel.
Yeah. Seal Henry. Seal. Seal Henry Samuel. Henry Samuel.
I literally can't find out why
he's called Seal. No. So, listeners to the Guitar Nerds podcast, if you know why Seal is called Seal, then, you know, write in and let us know.
Of course, Kiss from a Rose on the soundtrack to the best Batman film, Batman Forever.
Well, that's not the best Batman
film.
It
is absolutely the best Batman film.
Is that the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger in?
No, that's the one with...
That's Batman and Robin.
Yes,
that is the best one ever.
No, it's the one with...
The best one is Danny DeVito's Batman Returns.
No, definitely not.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Definitely not. We're getting a little off track, but
Bringing it back around, Jeff Beck performed with Seal, covering Jimi Hendrix for a 1993 tribute album.
There we go. That, good. And we're back. We're back to boring old guitar players.
And that was all planned, listener. We knew we were bringing it back to guitars, and we did just that. Well, yes, anyway, talking about guitars. So you remember last week I sort of semi-accidentally purchased a...
did it turn up?
Yeah. My Squire Vista series Music Master. Wonderful series, the Vista stuff, because they were Chinese-made Squires. Where I think 1996, I think, was the year, but they only made them for 1 year, the Music Masters.
Really?
1 year. Available in four colours. There was a black, a white... I can't remember what blue it was, and shell pink, standard colours, matching headstocks.
Yeah,
blooming lovely.
I was going to say, I just googled it, and there's a shell pink one pickup Squire Vista Music Master
bass or the guitar.
No, it was a guitar.
Oh, they did. I guess did a matching guitar set, didn't they?
Wasn't it like a little humbucker in there?
Yeah.
Oh, really? You got a humbucker in there?
Seymour Duncan, maybe.
It's quite interesting, the pickup that went in the bass, because it was, of course, the original Music Master basses from the 70s, which, of course, is the other one I got. It's a guitar pickup.
Yeah.
Because they made the original Music Masters were essentially Fender's ultimate bitsers. They were made from, you know, what they had in excess from previous models, which is why you got the bridge with just two adjustable saddles, which I found this week trying to intonate a guitar where two strings are sharing a saddle.
Great fun.
It's impossible. It's actually impossible.
And looking at prices, man, people want a lot of money for that Courtney Love signature.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's a great. That, I mean, they go for like 700-800 quid now. The Venus is a fantastic guitar. It's really cool. Nick Reinhardt, of course, plays Squire Vista series.
He's got all of them, hasn't he?
He's got a Venus, but his one that he's famous for is that. It's not a Jagstang, is it? It's the reverse-bodied Jaguar.
Supersonic.
Yeah, yeah. That was it.
They did a great one, which we've talked about in the Facebook group a couple of times. It's the Subsonic,
right?
Which is the baritone.
That was the Strat that was a baritone. They did it in graffiti yellow.
Because I'm sure they did a black one because they had reverse headstocks,
they
right?
They probably did do it in black as well. I just remember it being graffiti yellow.
Yes, Korean though.
Because that was the time of the Cyclone as well, the Fender Cyclone. Remember that?
That didn't come out of the Vista series though.
No, but neither was the Subsonic.
Subsonic was a later series.
They were both Fender, but the Squire Vista series were generally speaking cracking. I wish they'd do something like that again, just quirky, well-made Squires.
As I predicted, is the Squire Vista better than the 70s Music Master?
So I much prefer the neck on the old Music Master.
Really? But they're like a little pool cue. They're horrible.
It's really thick, really deep. I can really get my hands around it.
They're like really round.
Yeah, really round, which is great because I have a really heavy gauge set of strings on there and I have the action really high, so it really feels like a proper baseball bat, which is quite nice. I kind of like that. The Vista series is absolutely the opposite. It's very, very thin, which I'm not that into, but you know, I'm fine. I just made the action a little bit higher to make it feel sort of a bit more substantial. But
which one are you going to keep?
I'm probably going to keep both of them because I figure if I do start playing them then I need a backup,
add to the pile
for tour. So I was the Vista series has a really interesting thing with the pickups. I don't know if it happened with any of the guitar pickups at all, but on the Music Master basses, sort of famously, or is well known about those Squire Vista series, they wound the pickups too tightly. So all of them that are around today, the pickups are bent inwards on themselves.
Oh, weird.
So the two ends are raised up. Now, Charlie Ralphs, who we used to work at, or I worked at Gap with, I think she started after.
She did.
You'd left. She was telling me about it because it was the case in a picture of a white one I was looking at to get. And then I got this black one, exactly the same thing. And she said that, it's something that occurred on all these Vistas, which is very unusual. But then she was saying, actually, the pickups sound great. And if anything, it makes them more, they've got sort of a real P-bass clang to them.
Right, okay.
Really great pickup. So I think the pickup sounds better in the Vista than it does in the Music Master. I do still think those guitar pickups in the old 77 sounds perfectly good. Although I was having a look at James's...
Although, it sounds perfectly good. Although I'm probably going to spend a lot of money replacing it.
Well, James's Home of Tone, they do... what's the pickup brand that James's Home of Tone do? I can't remember the name. It begins with M. Is this going to last for as long as I can? McNelly pickups. They do a Music Master replacement, which is a little humbucker where they've managed to fit the whole humbucker on that tiny little
thing. Do you want that, though, on that bass?
I don't know. I'm actually quite happy with the tone of both the pickups,
I think,
to be honest.
That 70s one that you've got is in such bad condition that you should just go wild and put like a mud bucker in it. Just really carve it out. Yeah.
Well,
go.
It is one of those guitars that you could just kind of...
I can do whatever with it. Yeah. Well, I ordered some new knobs for it because the knobs were all messed up. And like I said, I'm taking the scratch plate off of both of them and sending them up to Fidelity Guitars to get a...
New plates fitted.
New plates fitted, yeah, for both of them.
In what colour?
I'm probably going to go for like a tiger stripe, if I can.
Anodized gold.
No, not anodized gold. I want big,
not thick. On black, Matty.
Yeah.
Yeah?
No. Never on black,
pimp.
Mate. No, it's not. No. To be honest, I probably will just go for black acrylic on both, because it's white on the Vista, but black on the 77.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing with the Vista as well, it looks like someone at some point had sort of drawn little written little messages and drawn little alien heads all over the scratch plate with a Sharpie.
Okay.
And then they've cleaned them off, but it's aged in that time. So I can see sort of the white outline. You couldn't see them in the photos, but you can see it up close.
Leave it on.
I don't mind it. It's not the end of the world.
It's a bit of history, isn't it?
Yeah, why not? Why not indeed? I prefer the Vista series is strung through the body as well, which is a little bit nicer for
that's much
for the
better.
Tension.
Is the other one not?
No.
They're strung to the bridge.
Yeah, strung through the bridge on a short scale and with that flimsy bridge.
To be honest, it sounds
kind of like how
a lot like the Vista one might be better.
I think I just love the neck on that old 70s one. Really do. Yeah,
just really do. Weird little kind of tight pool cue neck on them. Not into it. Yeah. Not into it.
Fair. I mean, like I said, the I need two hands to tune. Because the tuners are so just, messed up.
Yeah,
just never tune it.
Yes, I'm hoping just, that I will rarely need to do that. And it would just
put a Floyd on it with a locking nut, yeah, and then
chop the headstock off. Yeah, then just sort of make it headless.
Yeah,
just squeeze another like fifth string in there. Job done.
Yeah. Well, you know, you were saying about modifications. So the other thing I purchased today for both of them was some 10mm thick A5 side black acrylic, which I will cut and file to make
scratch plate?
No.
Thumb rest?
No. The other thing. What do you call them? A ramp. A ramp.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, because
10mm thick?
Yeah, I might have gone for 8mm in the end because I think that was a safer.
What? Why?
I measured the height of the pickup.
Why?
Because I need someone to rest my thumb.
Why don't you just put a thumb rest on it?
Well, because thumb rests don't really work as a concept because they're so thick.
Yeah.
That it means that when you're playing finger style, when you hit on the low E and your finger goes to sort of follow through to sort of give it that power.
Does what?
It gets your finger gets stuck on your finger knocks into the underside.
Here's
of
one
the,
for you.
Of the thing, which is never far enough away from the string to stop it from just sort of bouncing off and stop it. So you can't really, they don't work.
Have you heard, there's actually another thing you can buy that's made of sort of plastic, but it's probably not quite as expensive as what you're planning. You can buy them in all stores, actually. They're right. Amazing, and they don't really cost very much.
Yeah.
Plectrums?
Yeah, no. It's not what I need. That's not.
I love the fact that this is the ultimate bodge bass when you own a 69 bass.
You're playing some old tatty late 70s Music Master piece.
Ultimate
of
student bass.
Garbage.
Oh, I love it. Oh, come on. It's cool. It basically.
No,
I wanted a P bass that wasn't. Like, I wanted a cool old clangy sounding P bass that didn't cost as much. That 69 is only going to go up in value.
Yeah, you just put that in a box under the bed. Yeah. Leave it.
And when I sort of, when I had those issues with it at the first show, when I snapped the nut.
I love how your next thing is not to be like, okay, well, I've got a really good, really expensive P bass. Love how that sounds. Your next thing is not like, oh, I'll just buy like an American standard that I can use all the time.
Yeah.
Just take out, and it's a cool thing. Your thing is, I'm going to buy two Music Masters.
Yeah.
Both for a few hundred quid.
Yeah.
Why don't you just get an American P bass?
Well, I do often think about it. I do often
just
think,
like, something that you know is going to work. Like my P bass, I've had for 16 years.
Yeah.
It's literally never failed.
Yeah.
One of the tuners exploded, not at a gig. It was while I was doing a restring, and that's the only problem I've ever had with it.
Mm. That's definitely
best sounding bass ever.
Literally the best sounding bass I've ever heard.
I do really favour the reliability of modern instruments in comparison to all of the old ones.
An instrument from the most unreliable time
what
in
was
Fender's
that?
History.
The 70s?
Yes.
Yeah, I suppose so. Although 1996 wasn't, especially great time.
Yeah, but those Vistas are well built.
Yeah, they're fine. They are perfectly well built.
I'm into mid-90s Strats.
Really? Mid-90s Strats? That's a really...
Yeah, what, early 90s, mid-90s, just good.
What does
standard.
I don't understand. What is a mid-90s Strat? What defines a mid-90s Strat?
Just one that was built in the mid-90s.
Yeah, but what defines it? Do they change the neck
price? No bells,
the bridge?
No.
The pickups? How can you pick that out then?
So today on Reverb, actually, I saw a 1989 Strat come up.
Right.
And
that's a weird year, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's literally nothing. Like, you know, it's post the kind of like two-knob Strat.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Best one ever.
Era.
Got lace sensors in it.
No, they don't have lace sensors.
They just
don't
like this.
No, they've got just standard pickups.
I actually went to see School of Rock yesterday.
Okay.
Which was really good. And the guy, one of the pit musicians, was playing a Strat, and I could tell that it had lay sensors in it. I was like, that sounds wicked.
Yeah, it sounded like someone hitting a piece of A4 paper.
yeah.
So anyway, this 89 Strat.
That was the year that Batman came out.
Very good. And I was like, there's nothing essentially wrong with this guitar, but there's just nothing that I like about it. Like, they've got essentially the same logo that the kind of early to mid 2000s Strats and Tellys had. They've got that kind of silvery Fender logo, not like the kind of spaghetti logo like you'd find on something now. They've got that kind of weird, quite cheap looking.
I think I know what you mean.
And again, it was just like, it was a sunburst maple Strat, and I was like, but there's just something about it that just doesn't look quite right. And I think it was the logo, because it's got that cheap kind of, the same logo as the Mexican guitars.
I miss both of my 2001 American Strats. I should have never sold either of them. Yeah, they were great guitars.
Wait, what ones do you have? Oh, an Aztec Gold one. I didn't know you had another one.
They were both Shoreline Gold.
Shoreline Gold.
One was a 2001, I want to say, it wasn't the Fat Strat, because the Fat Strat... No. Was it the Fat Strat had the HSS mark, or was it the Big Apple Strat that had the two humbuckers?
Yeah, so Big Apple was two humbuckers, and Fat Strat, you're right, was HSS.
Big Apple?
Yeah,
Big Apple Strat.
Big Apple.
Two Seymour Duncan humbuckers in a Big Apple Strat.
Two Pearly Gates humbuckers. Mine, ooh. The Fat Strat was a Pearly Gates in the bridge, and then two Texas Specials.
Yep.
And then I had a 1997 Strat Plus, which was amazing.
Strat Plus.
Wow. Yeah, loved it.
Matthew, why don't you just buy a fairly inexpensive American Strat and just get some lace sensors and put it in there and build the dream guitar?
You know, the early 90s, the late 80s, early 90s Strat Pluses are going for like over 1,500 quid.
Well, that's
now.
What I'm saying, but why don't you just buy, like you could probably pick up like a... maybe an early 2000s American Strat for maybe like 500 or 600 quid at the moment. Just buy one of those, put some lace sensors in it, job done. How much is a set
maybe
of lace sensors? Isn't there even like a Dave Gilmour lace sensor set? Or is that an EMG set?
Don't want that. You know, I want the classic blue, red, gold set, whatever it is.
Yes, fantastic. I reckon you should do it. Do you know what? I'm kind of like, if I was going to buy a guitar now, and I think like, what, you know, compared to their new value, you can pick up early 2000s Fender stuff incredibly cheap right now.
Yeah, probably.
Like, or I could get the 1981 vintage Fender USA Standard Strat 2 with two pickups and two controls.
Yeah.
£1,000, you know.
Wait, Strat 2?
Yeah. I think it's called the Strat 2 or the Lead?
The Lead 2. Yeah, the Lead 2.
The Lead 2.
But that's like the weird like double cut one. Like, I know a Strat's double cut anyway, but it looks it's kind of like
weird.
A Strat that's morphing into like an Epiphone Wilshire.
I mean,
really?
Even this?
They did one of those. Because I guess they had similar things around that same time. They did that jazz bass that had the longer horn as well.
Yeah, right? That whole time is very, very odd.
Oh,
but
what were they doing?
But yeah, I think value for money wise now, you
early
can get
2000s.
American Strats and Tellys very cheap.
They're just so vibeless, Mark.
They're not, though. They're
all
right. Tell you what, like a Olympic white maple neck American Strat is a good guitar.
Well, yes, it's a good guitar, but it's not like as vibey as buying a sort of 70s Music Master.
Yeah, but also, I mean, that it would cost you less than a 70s Music Master and it wouldn't
and
be absolutely dreadful.
Yeah, you also don't want a 70s Strat. Everyone I've played, super heavy, super bad.
Yeah, not
good.
What's
wrong with heavy?
Heavy's not good.
Heavy might be good on a bass. Occasionally. Yeah. It's not good on a 70s Strat.
Oh, speaking of heavy, you know, I was thinking about the other day when I was at the Warwick factory. And
well,
they had...
What, you were there the other day?
No. I was thinking about
I
was there a couple of years ago. And I got to try out the Jonas Hellborg bass.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
What an absolute... Like, Matt, do you know about the Jonas Hellborg? Do you know what this is?
Yes. Because Juan Alderete plays one, right?
Well, he played one for a bit. He sent his back because he couldn't get, they couldn't make it light enough for him, and they kept chambering out parts of it. So the idea of the Hellborg listener is that it is like a double cut Gibson 175, but a bass.
I remember this.
It's completely solid.
Yeah,
completely solid. It weighed an unbelievable amount. I mean, it sounded great. And it's his original models just had one jazz bass pickup right on the bridge. So it was like the most amount the most amount of wood and then the thinnest pickup you can imagine. It was such a weird combo.
Just get an American standard P bass. That's all you need.
I mean, it's true for reliability. I just want the cool vibe of an old, like, sort of semi-butchered Music Master.
Don't need it, mate. Cool. Bring your own vibes.
Yeah. No.
BYOV. BYOV.
Oh, no, I don't think we should.
BYOV.
Very well. Also, this week, so, you know, I've been getting really into the Helix again, spending a lot of time on the Helix.
Yeah.
Discovering snapshot mode, which I, you know, found very, very... very good, very useful snapshot mode.
What is it? Explain to people who don't know, like me.
Okay, so snapshot, as opposed to, because you'd be, with multi-effects, you'd be familiar with the standard two types of using them you have.
You talked about this already.
Have I? No, yeah. I've never talked about snapshot, because I only discovered it the other week.
Oh, okay, fine.
But you could either have...
You've told me about it, I think.
Right, maybe. You could either have individual stomps that you turn on and off, or you have presets that you're switching between. Snapshot allows you to set up a single pedal board and then manipulate things, multiple things within that one board. But because all you're actually doing is maybe turning two of this on, swapping this amp head for that one, but all in an existing chain, it means there's none of that delay that you get on digital multi-effects in between setting up effects, which I found to be very, very good. But interestingly enough, I started messing around because I've been trying to build Tim a sort of board for his guitar.
Your guitar player?
Yeah, my guitar player. Because he's just, you know, it's not, you know, he can play the thing. He just, you know, he doesn't own a computer. Doesn't own a computer.
Okay. Has he got a phone?
Yeah, he doesn't reply on it, though. Yeah, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't know how to use it. He once managed to WhatsApp us all a photograph of his forehead. You know, when... True story. But
is it like Ed Balls Day?
Yeah, like Ed Balls Day. Yeah. So I was looking around on the various amp presets. Now, he was really into the sound of the Vox AC15. Of course, the cool thing is, you know, an AC15 might, you know, not be loud enough or not have enough headroom, but because this is on the Helix, the volume's variable, so you can just concentrate on the tone. So that sort of thing was great. And I was looking around at all these old amps and I found the Cartographer, which is one of the amps. And you can kind of work out what all of the amp models are based on. There are things like, you know, there's the Mandarin amps. Yes. Orange.
Yep. Yeah. Makes sense.
You know, yeah, you've got that. Like the Vox stuff is called the Essex. So there's the Essex, you know, AC, Vox. It's sort of a mix of those. Like all of them are quite obvious in that sense. But I really couldn't work out the Cartographer. And it was on a later update. So it's not on the list of amps on the sort of user manual.
Got it.
So I looked it up and it turned out that it was a later edition of an amp that was built by Ben Adrian, who listens to the podcast, is on the podcast group, and it was designed by him using the software. So it's essentially a Helix amp created using Helix. So by using the parameters of the software to not try and imitate something, but to create something from scratch, he sort of accidentally created something that's much better than anything
which
else.
Which you think is the best patch.
Well, no, but it is. And actually, it's not just me. If you search, I found when I started searching like Helix Cartographer, there were loads of videos and loads of, you know, loads of forum discussion about people being like, Cartographer, it's the only thing I use now. It's the best one on there. But because he was able to create a sort of versatility to it without having the limitations of having to make it sound like, you know, like something pre-existing in the real world, it meant that it actually just made a really, really good sounding Helix amp. So yeah, that was my for Helix owners. If you, I'm sure anyone who owns a Helix spends a lot of time on the Cartographer, but I was thoroughly impressed at sort of using it for everything from like extreme drives to sort of, you know, crystal clear cleans and everything in between. It was a fantastic bit of kit. Now, Matt, you've been building a pedal board this week.
I have, yes. I finally got round to the starting of rebuilding the ungiggable rig, because I actually dismantled my big pedal board about 8 months ago, and I've been so busy I just haven't actually put it back together since then, and I've just been running a just individual pedals or straight into my amp. And obviously last year I sold my other cabs and I sold my other head and I've just been running in mono. But part of this, part of building the big pedal board is I've also ordered a new rack unit from Zilla. So I can rehouse everything in a rack system as well. So
wait, what do you mean rehouse everything?
Well, I've got things like my old Space Echo and I've got a bunch of rack units and stuff that have been sitting in my cupboard for like a year because I haven't had a rack system to build everything into.
Right.
Which was all controlled via MIDI. And obviously once I dismantled that, I dismantled my pedal board with the ES8. And I finally got around to putting all the pedals on that I really wanted on there and actually rebuilt it into the neatest version of a pedal board I think I've actually ever built, and probably the most pleased I've ever been with a pedal board. What I tend to do is lay everything out and then leave it for about a week and then look at it every day going, is this actually really what I want to commit to? Because so many times I've just built a pedal board and then gone, I hate this, and I've just wasted loads of time doing it, and then I've got to redo it. But I've actually managed to put a bunch of great pedals on it and a bunch of sort of new pedals, and
it's Boss TU2, Boss DS1, Boss BD2, Boss PH3.
It's all the best ones.
Yeah.
All the good
What's
ones.
What's on it then, Matt? Talk us through it.
So I have expanded the ES8 to an extra couple of extra loops first and foremost. The ES8 is normally 8 loops. I've added an external box that is another 2 loops. So I've got 10 pedals that can all be switched in and out.
Okay.
So it runs into, and I'm just going to look at it here, it runs into an OC2 Octava, best octave pedal ever
wonderful,
made.
Wonderful Octava.
What year is your one?
My one is, it's a made in Japan one, so I think it's probably like mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
But don't know the official year. You've got my very old one, which
the
is
1984,
old,
yeah.
Yeah, which is the Octava, which had the extra R on the end.
Yeah.
Which is the first production year. Amazing sounding octave pedal. Tracks pretty well, but it's just got this really nice synthy sort of vibe to it. That things like the Micropog and stuff are great, but they sound too good.
Well, yeah.
And this sounds bad.
The note is very present on things like a pog. It literally is like a second instrument running alongside you an octave down. It really has the attack at the sort of front end of the note. Whereas the OC2, it's more like the presence of that octave than anything else. It's just,
I think it's just, for me, it's more about like what it does when it can't properly track the note. Like
I really like using it sort of when I really like hammer into, because I'm drop tuned sometimes as low as C on a bass, and it absolutely cannot handle that. And if you really if you really hit a floppy string anyway, so it's that string itself is kind of moving in and out of that note,
because it
can't sort of track that movement, it just gives you sort of massive sort of big
How's it going?
Good.
That's my favourite sound. I love it.
It's a new sound clip for the archives.
Yeah.
So it runs into that, and then it runs into a Boss FZ2 Hyperfuzz, which is effectively a clone of a Shinai Ultra? No, Univox Superfuzz, which is like an octave up type fuzz, but when you run it with the OC2, it's like the best synth sound ever. So I run those in a dual loop just outside of the ES8, and then I go into the Grouter Moonlight, which is like a fuzz face. I've got a Thorpe Dane, which I love, sounds amazing. We talked about it on the podcast before, but the
gear of the
boost
year.
Side of it, yeah. Gear of it. Just that boost side with all of the boost off and then the lows just like maxed out is just like the best make gooder a pedal ever. Absolutely love it. Run into my old 1978 Op Amp Big Muff, which has been on pretty much every pedal board I've ever built since I bought it. And then I run into a Analog Man modded DD2.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. So that, it's got a high switch that basically takes off the top end of the repeat, so you can't get it to self-oscillate, but it does mean you can crank the repeats to max, and then you get this really cool like analog-style delay effect, but it's just a little bit brighter than a true analog delay. Because then I run into an Analog Man ARD X20, which I don't know if you guys have seen. It's basically a It's a dual analog delay pedal that's kind of built around the idea of a Deluxe Memory Man, but the repeats are a little bit cleaner. They don't kind of go as sort of dirty as a Deluxe Memory Man. But they've built this other box called the Amazio.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
So it looks like a Game Boy or something.
Yeah, it's massive. So it's got an A and a B, so two different preset delays that you can set with both level feedback and delay time. But you can plug another thing in called the Amazio, which then gives you presets and tap tempo and modulation that you can add to the repeats. So you can basically have presets on an analog delay pedal. And then you can flick through those and make all sorts of quirky sounds. But you get, one thing I loved was being able to switch in the modulation. And you can vary the modulation, so how warbly and how kind of want the modulation.
Great. So it's got a date and repth.
date and reps.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's wicked. That just runs in mono. And then I go into a DC2. And then I go into an Eventide H9, which covers...
Which does all of those things that you've...
Which does all of those things in one. But I use it mainly for...
tuner.
Reverbs. Yeah, tuner.
Imagine that if you just used it for the... Yeah, it's got a sort of half-decent chromatic tuner built in. So I just use that.
I use it mainly for reverbs and some of the modulation stuff that I don't cover with anything else. I also have a VB2, which I love, which I run that in the volume loop because I always have it.
Not the Wazza, the old one.
No, the Wazza one, because I always have it in unlatching mode.
That's a cool way of using it.
And actually, a cool thing with the VB2 is if you have it in unlatching mode, it always runs through the BBD chip, so it gives everything just like a slight bit of low end boost, which is really good. If you put it in the latching mode, it switches the whole thing out.
Right,
it doesn't do that on the unlatching mode. So yeah, it's the most proud I've ever been of a pedal board.
Oh, that's great! It sounds decent, like substantial. You've got enough quirky things on there, but you know, with enough sort of usable things. Sorry, what was the Dane is your drive? That's your main drive.
Yeah, that's kind of like the main. But I've been using the Moonlight, the Grauter Moonlight loads. I've been getting really into like more fuzz pedals.
Cool.
Which has been great. And actually, I used the H9. What I've been messing around, because I haven't plugged the H9 in for like 8 or.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
9 months because I use MIDI on it all the time with the ES8, and then going back to that, like going into all of like the pitch stuff. So obviously like seeing loads of things from Meris and like the Hedra and all that, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I can get some similar things out of the H9 because that's what the Hedra's based on. It's based on those old Eventide harmonizer rack units, and they're all built into the H9. So I'm like, great, I can just mess around with those. And the ES8 then gives you all the MIDI flexibility to change all the settings on the fly. So that's been really fun. I've been getting into doing some sort of more quirky stuff.
Oh, wicked.
You've been getting into doing more quirky stuff, Matt.
I sort of gone back to plugging straight into the amp.
Yeah, who would do that? I've had a similar week to Matt. You know, I've been playing around my setup, moving a few things around, mainly putting stuff in boxes and taking them to the post office.
I think this minimal setup should be something you should be proud of.
Literally
testament to the Katana.
I've even sold
testament to your telly.
I've even sold the pedal board, so the Nano has gone in a box and is ready to go. I've sold.
You might as well just kept hold of that.
Yeah. What do you get? £20 for it.
That's going £25. That's going. So literally, all I've got now is two guitars, one cable, and the Katana.
You've got three guitars.
I've got three, but they're under the bed.
Wait, why have you got? Did you say two cables or one cable?
One cable.
One cable.
One cable.
Like, I misheard that. It's like two guitars, two cables.
That really upsets me.
Yeah, I'm going into the headphone output.
At least tell me it's a good cable.
It's like a Gibson Custom Shop one that I've had for years.
Oh, okay.
Basically, I don't think I've bought a guitar lead probably since about 2000 and...
since you started working.
Probably since about 2009, I haven't bought a guitar lead.
Really?
So I'm using the Gibson Custom Shop one, which had some old, like... They weren't even Custom Shop. They were like, when you bought a nice Gibson, they came with a pack that had like a cleaning cloth and a cable, and we had some extra packs that...
Right.
I just ended up with one of the cables somehow. And then the cable that I use live is the Elixir one that I've got, which is literally like phone, like old school, like telephone exchange phone cable.
Oh, that sounds awful.
It's so good.
Why don't you have good cables?
It's great. It's really good.
I mean,
it's lasted literally since about 2009.
I have a pizza box of Sinusoid Custom Shop cables.
Yeah, I know, but
they're
for guitar nerds, aren't they? I just have this in my gig bag. I've used it for literally, probably 10 years, this one cable.
Uh-huh.
It's great. It's great. I don't know if they still make them, the Elixir cables.
I've got a luminous pink Ernie Ball one that they sent us.
I don't need it.
I've also got a mauve.
This is going to be my cable for life.
Yeah.
For when I do my one gig a year every year until I die, I'm going to be using this Elixir.
My band, we all use those, those Fender Custom Shop cables, the black tweed ones.
Yeah.
Because, everything's black.
But yeah, sure.
We get through those quite often.
Yeah, but you throw yourself about in that,
don't
you?
Yeah, I guess that is it. I think they are good cables. We just, stand on them a lot.
I'm going to look and see if Elixir still do those cables. And if they do, I'm going to email them and say, I've been using one of these for ages. Do a podcast. Can I just have free ones?
Why would you do that?
I don't even need them.
You don't even need them?
No.
We've got loads.
But maybe we can give some away. Maybe we can make other people's lives, how mine has been, which is, the one cable life.
I'm not giving these people anything. Speaking of giving people... what they want. Today was...
What they need.
Yeah, today we launched, although it's been there for a while, the new Guitar Nerds merch store with loads of T-shirts, phone cases.
Guitar Nerds phone cases.
Oh, yeah, for every Samsung and every iPhone. How about that?
I did notice, unfortunately, on the Samsung case,
it
cuts off the words a little bit, so you might need to redesign that a little bit.
I can't be bothered. Who has a Samsung phone? Well, I thought about not making it available for Samsungs at all, just because.
Yeah, I mean, who would not have a non-iPhone?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Exactly. Weird.
Me.
But yes. Yeah, and I'm going to do some more mugs. I need to do some more design. I'm going to be adding stuff every week.
They look good. For once, you did something that I approved of, and it was great. Just so you know, Elixir no longer make guitar cables, so...
Ooh.
Yeah.
I doubt they... Elixir made guitar cables.
Well, no, but
place.
Whatever they were branding.
They outsourced.
It's literally a cable that I've never seen anywhere else, so I don't even know... I don't even know who made it or what the kind of history was. Can you buy it unbranded anywhere? Yeah, I think you just can't get them anymore.
Well, just get a good cable.
Yeah, I've got a great cable.
Matt,
I've
what
got
cables
a great
do
one.
You? Oh yeah, silly question.
I for a long time, maybe like 8 years was using monster cables because
they were everyone I knew who I thought was a bit of a played monster cables. Like they were like the, it was how I judged a musician as to whether or not they were one of those people that had no ability but got all the gear. Because is spending money on a cable,
all the gear, no idea. Yeah, my classic jam night.
Yeah, true. Spending money, like as much money as monster cables were, spending that much money on a cable for me was like the ultimate.
Yes, but you have to remember, I worked in a store, so I paid for it.
I didn't realise we ever sold them.
They came through Shaw, and I don't know if they still do, but they came through Shaw, and they were doing monster cables. So I had monster cables for a bit. And about a year ago, I switched to Boss cables. So I use Boss cables for everything, MIDI, stereo cables, patch cables, speaker leads.
They're actually good, the Boss and Roland ones.
They're great.
I just like it. I like I don't know, what do you call the material? Like the kettle like lead material, you know, the sort of woven.
Like braided.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah. You know, I like that sort of thing.
I genuinely think they're amazing cables, and I'm just like, yeah, great. So I switched my whole rig out for those, and even the speaker cable. The speaker cables are really, really heavy duty. But obviously, when I was rebuilding the board and I was using all the patch cables, I thought I'll switch to Boss cables and, you know, represent the brand that I work for.
Yeah,
I can't find out anything about these Elixir cables. They're gone forever.
Well, do they have like a? Which ones were the ones? Were they those ones that had? No, the ones that had like the massive jack plug end that really
were the ones that locked on.
No. There were ones that there was someone who made a cable that didn't they have like a wooden jack on the end?
Yeah, that was
Gibson.
That?
Did
I think
one
it was
like
Gibson.
Oh,
yeah,
I loved that because that was they released those around the same time that they did the Gibson Looper cable.
Yes, they had the record. It wasn't Looper.
Oh, not a Looper.
Had recording
sorry.
In the cable.
Yeah. Oh, that's everything you've ever wanted.
Very, very
it's
odd.
So good.
See, this is what we're going to be talking about now that I've sold all my pedals. I'm just like, right, bring on
cables.
The accessories. Yeah, yeah. Be me and Jay versus you guys.
Well, someone did suggest that we release our own branded Shell Pink mini power supply.
Yeah, just do that.
An excellent
I wonder
idea.
If one spot will just. Why don't we just buy a load of one spots and then just
spray
dip them in paint?
Spray paint them.
See if we can do them. But I'm up for it. It's new accessories cast.
Yeah, that's what this will become. Anyway, let's do some news. So first up, this is actually something that came out last week. We didn't quite have time for it. Matt, talk to me about getting wetter.
Yes, the Gig Rig have announced the Wetter Box, which is the sequel, if you will, to their Wet Box.
I didn't realise it was a second thing. I thought it was a play on the word letterbox. I thought that's what it was. Oh.
No. I actually saw this very, very briefly at NAMM this year.
I assumed it was because it would fit through a letterbox. I thought that was the whole thing.
It probably wouldn't.
No, I don't think it would, unfortunately. Sorry to ruin your dreams there, Joe, of receiving pedals through your letterbox. So this is a parallel loop box. Now, why would you want a parallel loop box? Well, it allows you to do a couple different things, which is really, really cool. You can run a delay and a drive in parallel and then fade one of them in. So rather than switching in a delay pedal, for example, on top of your distorted sound, you can fade it in with an expression pedal. And running it in parallel means that you get a really decent, a cleaner tone between the two. Because when it's off, there's always analog dry-through signal. But there's a couple of other things that you can do in terms of running it in your amp's effects loop. So you can actually have a small pedal train nano, for example, with this and two pedals. And run your effects loop through it and another pedal, and then just have a remote switch in front of the stage to switch your effects loop on and off, and an expression pedal to fade in your delay repeats or your reverb, for example. So it's like a constant onboard mix control. And you can use it in the sense that you've got an A loop and a B loop, so you can actually fade between one and the other, or you can sit somewhere in the middle, or you can have A always on maximum and then fade in the other pedal. So it gives you a bunch of cool options for actually like expanding your your rig, for
example.
It
sounds very complicated, but it's I guess it's aimed at that sort of a complicated player.
It's, well, it's effectively the same. It's an advanced take, in a way, on... It was funny, when I was at NAMM, I was talking to Nick Reinhardt and Juan Aldrett, and we were talking about the Swiss
I knew that's what you'd talk about.
And they were like, have you seen this pedal? And they handed a Boss LS2 to me and were like, it's very, very similar to this obviously very old concept of two loops that you can then switch A or B. So it's a take on that. It does a very, very similar thing, but it adds on a whole bunch of extra layers on top of that. And actually, they did... That pedal show did a video this week where they had an artist using it, and they were going between the room sound on a reverb and then fading in a delay pedal that effectively was set 100% wet for the like pre-delay on the room. So it adjusted the sound of the room reverb. I mean, it's a pretty extreme example.
Yeah.
But it gave like a really cool effect. And I think it just allows you to be a lot more creative, and especially in the studio when you can, you know, sometimes you don't want to run, I don't know, one fuzz into another, for example, or you want to run a make good or a pedal, but you want to put a fuzz over the top, but the buffer pedal in front's going to affect the fuzz, for example. You can then have this, so
it certainly seems incredibly niche to find the situation where this is required, but nonetheless, it's in the situations where you need this, this is one of the only things that's going to do that for you. So that,
I don't know. I think it allows you to be relatively creative about how potentially some people, you know, the way you might want to just run your rig, for example.
Yeah, sure.
Or fade between two.
Soundscapes-wise, this is going to be very useful.
Yeah. They did a very, very good video that demonstrated a lot of different settings that, you know, I won't go into. They're very well demonstrated via audio, so it's definitely worth checking it out online. But what I really liked is that actually it's got trails on it as well, so you can set stuff up and you can have a big ambient sound and you can switch between the two.
Oh, that's cool.
You can blend stuff in. So I actually think it's a very cool creative tool for actually putting it in your board and doing something different. So it's definitely worth checking out if you want to expand your pedal board in a sideways movement, I would say, rather than just sort of like running stuff in chains. It does something, you know, very different. Reminds me of the Pigtronics Keymaster.
Oh, God. I haven't thought about that for a long time.
I don't even know what that is. Is it the same as this?
It's the Pigtronics Keymaster was a very, very similar thing. It was a parallel routing device for audio, but it also had XLRs in. So you can actually do it for microphones. So you had two effects loops, but you could do microphone XLR in and out, and then you could crossfade between two loops. You could run it in series or parallel. And a very good old customer of mine when I worked at GAC, Mr. Brown, never knew his first name. He loved
Seal.
This pedal. Seal Brown. He bought loads of pedals, but he always used his Keymaster because he was like, oh, it's amazing for like mixing loops and mixing pedals and creating new combinations of stuff. So yeah, it's I guess you could class it as maybe niche, but I think this is trying to bring it a lot more into the mainstream.
229 British pounds for the Wetterbox. Fair old chunk.
Is it? I know. I think it's... Are you sure that's not dollars?
No, it's pounds.
Are you on their website?
Yeah. 229
on their
pounds.
US. Really? I thought it was 169.
The press release I'm seeing also says 229 pounds.
See.
Okay.
Anyway.
My mistake.
It does sound cool. That does sound expensive. It's very, very niche, but, you know, it's definitely a super cool product. Mark Packham.
Hello there.
I want to talk about making melodies.
Okay, that's a weird way to phrase it, but let's do it. So, 5 Seconds of Summer. What do you know about them, Joe?
We don't need to talk about them.
What do you know about 5 Seconds of Summer? What's the 5 Seconds of Summer song?
I thought the guy from that band was really underrated when he played the Joker, and I liked him in Dallas Buyers Club.
4 Years Strong. No. 15 seconds to Mars.
That was the joke
I was
making. 5 seconds
of summer are an Australian pop rock band who some people may describe, perhaps in a derogative fashion, as a boy band. They've been kind of like, they're one of those like bands who...
Can we talk about the guitar?
I heard about them a long time ago, but it was always kind of bubbling under, and now... they're like massive, massive. They're bigger. They're like a kind of like, what was that other band? One Direction big.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're huge.
Certainly Michael Clifford, the man who we're talking about, he's certainly a strapping young lad. Very, very attractive.
Okay, good. So, yes, Michael Clifford, guitarist for Australian pop rock megastars 5 Seconds of Summer, has teamed with Gibson to bring out the 5 Seconds of Summer Michael Clifford signature model. And this is basically a take on the Joan Jett Melody Maker.
Fantastic, which he's been very open about.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, the video on the site, he basically says, I went to the Gibson kind of artist facility and picked out a guitar that I liked, and the one that I liked was the Joan Jett, but you can't get them anymore, so we wanted to do something different,
was saying he picked it up and thought it was the best guitar in the world.
Yeah, well, exactly, that's what I'm saying, but the problem is now, you know, no one can buy those anymore.
No, exactly. They're very sought after and very highly thought of.
He's been hanging out with
Jay
Cross.
Yeah, exactly. So he's basically done his own version of it. Very similar, same body shape. I guess what a few things
that
it's added.
I really like this body shape, the sort of symmetrical... double cut juniory sort of thing. Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah, well, it's a Melody Maker, isn't it? Yeah. It's a classic Melody Maker shape. The things to know are it's got that kind of like swamp ash body where the grains are like dyed. So it's like it's kind of a black guitar, but it's got that kind of red dye in the grain, much like the Les Paul Voodoos and Les Paul Menace back in the day.
In a way, it reminds me of those sandblasted Fenders. Yeah, it's not the same deepness of grain, but it's the same sort of vibe.
It's got that vibe as well. So you've also got rich light fingerboard with like red acrylic X's for your fret markers. Single humbucker in there, burst bucker 3. You've got a volume of tone
They're black and red as well, aren't they? The control knobs.
They are indeed. But you've also got a coil split, which is on the volume control.
Oh, so ruined it.
If you want single coils, they are also available. I really like it. Two reasons I like it. Obviously, I like the Joan Jett guitar. Plus, I also have a bit of a soft spot
for the band.
I couldn't tell you a single song. I've got a bit of
a soft spot for Michael Clifford.
I've got a bit of a soft spot for those guitars, the Voodoo, the Menace, back in the day.
The X.
What was the X? Les Paul X.
It was an SGX, wasn't it?
Oh, the one with the hole in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an Epiphone guitar. That was weird. Was it? Yeah. Very weird. Anyway, so I like it. I like the looks. I would think if you're into the Joan Jett thing, you'll probably like this as well. Both those guitars had kind of like polarizing features. The Joan Jett had the heart fret markers. This has got the red acrylic fret markers on there. So, yeah, there'll be things that will split the audience. But I think in general, it's been quite a thumbs up for this one.
How much Mooney?
How much money?
1,099 British pounds.
Indeed. That's the only thing I would say is he describes it in the video as a guitar, like someone's first guitar, and then it's a 1099. But as always with Gibson stuff, like the initial MSPs that get kind of advertised, you usually see the guitars, there's deals and stuff like that. So you'll probably pick one up a bit cheaper.
Yeah.
So, it's a cool thing.
I think they're very cool. Very cool indeed. Matthew Knight.
Yes.
I want to talk about...
You're not sure what you want to talk about, are you?
I was kind of choosing. But, well, no, there's no way to choose because the rest of the news is all being done by you.
Yeah.
So it's just Matt. I was just trying to think of a good segue for it. You see, listener, this next section is on barefaced cabs. I was trying to think, well, there's the expression barefaced liar. And I was like, maybe I can call Matt a liar in some comical way.
Doesn't work if you explain it all. It doesn't
work.
No,
I feel like the
moment's passed.
Tell me about this cab. This is actually really cool and exciting.
Yeah, so Barefaced Cab's actually based out of Brighton. And I know the guy that's been working with the main builder, I think, almost from like near day one, actually. Might be a very interesting person to have on the podcast at one point, because they are super into making guitar cabs and bass cabs and the like. And they like doing stuff very, very differently, and they're very scientific in their approach. So they have moved into guitar cabs now, where they were doing bass cabs for a very, very long time.
It was just bass cabs before, and they were very good, super lightweight. They made like 610s that you could pick up with one hand. They were very, very good and wonderful sounding cabs as well.
And they've moved that into guitar design, but they've got a pending patent on augmented vent diffractor, AFD technology. So rather than being open... AVD. Rather than being closed or open-backed, AVD takes the sound from the rear of the speaker and disperses it around the room. So the idea is that you get a better tone from your guitar cab no matter where you're standing. And the cab actually delivers twice the output because the front and rear of the cone are working in unison. So a 75-watt cab will be as comparable loud in volume as a 2x12, but offering a more consistent tone. So this is an entirely new cabinet type. It's not closed back, it's not open, it's not ported, it's a totally different type of cab. And after sort of reading the press release and everything about it, I really want to try it out. I think this sounds awesome. It's also got a low cut toggle switch, so you can switch between a closed back style fatness, as they put it, or an open back style tightness. But I think for gigging, I think the idea is that it gives a more dispersed sound across a stage. And in their fashion, super lightweight. So they do a 10-inch and a 12-inch version. 10-inch is 6 kilos and the 12-inch is 10 kilos.
Blimey.
Which is kind of nothing.
That is fantastic. And a complete facelift as well. New logo, some lovely green Tolex on the pictured image, and a very classic
retro looking.
Yeah, much better. The only thing that put me off Bareface in the past for bass cabs was that it was it was so industrial looking. It had that sort of Galien Kruger sort of
their logo was very blocky in the past.
All blocks. I don't they're not carpet, are they? I think they were initially but a hard black Tolex. There's a couple in Brighton Electric studio at the moment, and it's that, you know, I just can't get on with metal grills. Like I'm immediately put off by metal grills. But anyway, carry on, Matt.
So just to sort of round up, this is the way that they put it. So a closed back cab gets you everything from the front of the cone but nothing from the back. Open back cabs give you mids and highs from the front and the back of the cone but cancels all the lows out. So AVD technology and this cab give you everything from the front and the back and the overall sound. So you get a much better spread, and you can use a 112 instead of using a 212. So I'm guessing they're thinking portability, they're thinking sound, and I'm guessing for recording, if you're in the studio as well, it's new options to mic up something and get a completely different sound. I think this is a nice range of options. So 10-inch version, 12-inch version, and they do American or British voicings. So they do a range of different Tolex and grill cloth variations. I think you can just go on their website directly. I think, as far as I remember, lastly, everything from them is direct order. I don't actually know if they have any dealers.
No, I think you deal with them directly in all cases. God, everything these days is like a single 10 or a single 12.
Yeah.
That's all you need. I know, but just
it's all you need.
It's going, isn't it? The days of big cabs, they're going.
Yeah. You don't need a big cab.
Well, I've got loads of big cabs. What am I going to do with all my big cabs? Yeah.
Kick them?
Well, don't phone them now, Matt. We're on a podcast. speak to them.
I'm going to phone them right now. Do you want to listen to the phone call as we're on the podcast?
Yeah, if you could just place an order, just give us your credit card details, and we can we can go from there.
But this sounds very, very interesting, and I think it's actually, you know, trying to do something different. So it'll be interesting to just actually try it out and see how it sounds compared to a normal 1x12.
They are super duper cool. I think they're going to be fantastical.
And they're built in Brighton, the best town in the world.
I think it's not technically Brighton, but yeah, we'll go with that.
Yes, why not?
It's nearby.
Why not indeed? Right. Anyway, that pretty much brings us up to time on this week's episode. I know you were poised there, Mark. Poised to tell us about this D'Angelico.
Yeah, two guitars. We'll talk about it over on the Patreon. There's two new guitars this week. One from D'Angelico, which is a signature model for Bob Weir.
Old Bob Weir.
Didn't know who that was. Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
And then a signature model also from Epiphone for George Thorogood.
And it's got a
snake on it. And it actually...
Apart
from the snake, it actually looks really good. But we'll talk about it over on the Patreon because I'm actually quite hyped about both of these.
Yes, we certainly will. Well, yes, over on the Patreon, where for as little as $1...
Held it together, well done.
You can support the podcast. $1 a month will get you the regular episode ad-free, so you don't get to hear my lovely adverts. And, you know, you get it a little bit early. $5 a month, though, makes you, you know, you get access to all the Patreon stuff.
I preferred it when you used to read this off a script.
Patreon special episodes, and, you know, I'm probably going to do some Sodo stuff on there. And then $10 a month makes you one of our executive backers, and it gets your name read out in one breath. But when are we going to think of something that's not me reading out in one breath?
I like it because you will die doing it soon. Yeah, you didn't actually say where people can do this. Patreon.com/guitar nerds.
Yeah, people find it, you know.
Fine. I love that that's what this has come to. Just too lazy to even read out where people give you the money.
We're so famous now that it doesn't matter.
Sure.
Most people have it bookmarked on their browser.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. Anyway, here we go. You ready?
Yep.
Jim Welter, Keith Adams, Steve Ferguson, Eric Fowle, Christopher Franklin, Andy Joyce, John Anglin, Adam Royce Crisp, Jake Cutmore, Robert Cousins, Rob Grew, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Abaddon, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Hench, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Emmy James Baker, Juan Correa, Aaron Sermon, Blake Wyland, Andrew Goody, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lawson, Hans Arm, Scott Kane, Robin Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordwick, Duncan Watson, Ed Bentley, Steve Merkel, DJ Marcos, Michael McRae, Carlos Mancha, Andy McKenzie, Brad Vage, Blair Tom, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Mill Gravett, Phil Thompson, Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Sean Arbo, Christopher Walmart, Thomas Hall.
There you go.
Yep, you're nearly dead.
I'm sort of nearly dead.
Close.
Yeah, it's close.
I can't wait for the day when you keel over.
I reckon 10 more.
Good.
Five more.
You're going to real struggle.
I wonder if I'll ever pass out on an episode.
I'd pay a lot to see that, to be fair. Mm. I would pay a year's worth of Patreon subscription to see that. And if you want to do that, pay a year's worth of Patreon subscription to make it happen, I will film it for you. So if we can get 5 to 10 new patrons this week, that would be fantastic. And then you can keel over and I'll film it and we'll all have a laugh.
Thanks very much. Well, anyway, you can join the discussion over on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum or follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Guitar Nerds, or check out our videos on YouTube by searching Guitar Nerds. I still haven't quite got
YouTube.com/guitar nerds. It's not that hard,
is it? Oh, is that what it is?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Anyway, yes, we're going to catch you on the Patreon. See you later. Farewell.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.